At RX Bar, they believe in simple nutrition without the BS. That's why they said no to artificial ingredients and yes to deliver intentional, transparent nutrition. Try their original 12-gram protein bar, the Nut Butter and Oat Bar, or Minis. RX Bar, the proud sponsor of No BS. Use code RXBAR on rxbar.com for 25% off. Subject to full terms and conditions and to change. Valid until September 30, 2025, and may not be combined with other offers. See rxbar.com for full details and limitations.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio will today head to Istanbul for peace talks on Ukraine. However, there's little hope of any breakthrough after President Vladimir Putin confirmed that he would not attend the talks, with Secretary Rubio saying both Putin and Trump would need to be there for any breakthrough. We'll get full analysis in a moment from Paul Rogers. But first, this is what Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky had to say at a press conference yesterday in response to the Russian leader's no-show.
I think that the Kremlin leader should show his leadership. If he's ready for negotiations, let's meet. Without any preconditions, whatever he wants, let's meet. We're in Ankara, in Turkey. We arrived here. Then we're sending our group to Istanbul. He's not here. He's not in Istanbul. We can't really run around the world looking for him. I believe the United States and Turkey are currently feeling disrespected by Russia, in my opinion.
And that was, in translation, President Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello.
And is this just a charade now for the next couple of days? Nothing really material will emerge?
It seems to be the case, yes. At the most, it's shadow boxing. Clearly, Zelensky has actually gone there, really, I suppose, to show up Putin for not going, and he hopes that that will be good as far as relations between Ukraine and the United States are concerned. We simply don't know what Trump is doing. We don't know whether he's heading back to the United States now for a weekend of golf or something else, and we just simply don't know whether he's really got his heart in trying to meet with Putin at the present time. He says that there's going to be no progress until he and Putin are met face to face. I'm not quite sure what Rubio is therefore doing, staying in the area. It is possible, just possible, that Trump may just change everything round and head to Istanbul or probably Ankara. But at the moment, we're just waiting in the dark to see what might happen.
Now, his comments on Air Force One to the press were saying, you know, I got to meet with Putin. He wouldn't go because I'm not there. And I'm, you know, whereas before he said if Putin went to Istanbul, he would fly there. He'd cut short his UAE visit, and he would make his way there. And then he spun that story to make it sound different.
Yes. I mean, the problem is you just can't be sure what Trump is saying, whether things are changing in his mind because of genuine changes externally, or whether he's just deciding what to do almost on the spur of the moment. It makes it an extremely difficult position for other diplomats because they simply don't know what's going on. I think one thing one has to recognize is that over the last 4 or 5 days, Trump has been much more concerned with doing massive deals with some of the oil and gas-rich states, Saudi Arabia, certainly United Arab Emirates, and probably others as well, almost certainly Qatar. And that is at the front of his mind. He is basically an economic or business deal maker. And that, I think, takes precedent. And the issues such as Gaza and Ukraine are really temporary to one side. That may change, but that's where we are at the moment. And, of course, Rubio is not there with him. Rubio is separately in Turkey.
Now, the question of the deals, I mean, he's already done the deal with Ukraine on the rare earth minerals. And it just goes to show that once you give Trump something, he just takes it. And there's no quid pro quo. I mean, there's no great support for Zelensky. He had a go at him the other day, suggesting that he better go to Istanbul to do these peace talks, which Zelensky said, yes, I will. And then Putin is a no-show. But you know what I mean? Eaten bread soon forgotten with Donald Trump.
I'm afraid so. And I think people are slowly realizing just what an extraordinary presidency this is turning out to be. I think in many different ways, a lot worse than even the most sort of pessimistic professional diplomat expected. You simply cannot tell what's going to happen next, which means all actions had to be kept open in terms of responding. Now, this is actually quite a well-known tactic in the business world. When you're making any big deal, sort of throw the other side into confusion. And it may be that that is coming to dominate Trump's whole style in this business. It certainly fits in with a lot of the stuff he's being doing or ordering to have done domestically. But at the same time, it also indicates that there are times when he just falls out with people big time. We're simply not sure where he is at the moment as far as some of the people he's working with in the States. But here again, this is the problem that you're having dealing with this man. It's so difficult from the norms, and certainly far more so than in his first term, where now he has, firstly, much more confidence himself, and if that's possible, and secondly, he has his own people surrounding him. It's a sycophancy, and that, of course, means that you do not get truth to power being spoken.
Now, there are all sorts of strange things are happening with this particular administration, but I'm wondering about President Erdogan of Turkey and what role he plays, because Turkey is a country that is in NATO, wants to be part of the EU, but has relatively cordial relations with Russia.
It does, and it has varying relations with Israel as well. To some extent, Turkey has a foot in probably three or four camps. But essentially, as far as Trump is concerned, he is somebody who you take note of simply because he's in that position. But how much note, again, is very difficult. Professional diplomats would recognize there are many troubles with Erdogan, particularly in relation to human rights in Turkey. But people will be prepared to deal with him because Turkey is a very important player. And as you say, it's in NATO. And that means it has a sort of an indicative power or indicative influence, which can't be discounted. Mm.
Let's turn our focus now to the Middle East and Gaza in particular. And I mean, the US seems to be talking directly to Hamas. An offer has been made about the release of all the hostages in exchange for Israel opening the doors to humanitarian aid and taking its military force out. I mean, what is going on between the United States and what is defined as a terrorist organization, Hamas?
At RX Bar, they believe in simple nutrition without the BS. That's why they said no to artificial ingredients and yes to deliver intentional, transparent nutrition. Try their original 12-gram protein bar, the Nut Butter and Oat Bar, or Minis. RX Bar, the proud sponsor of No BS. Use code RXBAR on rxbar.com for 25% off. Subject to full terms and conditions and to change. Valid until September 30, 2025, and may not be combined with other offers. See rxbar.com for full details and limitations.
Defined as a terrorist organization, and in terms of what it did on October the 7th, that certainly fits very much. But the problem is that people in Gaza, particularly the younger men, many of them are strongly supportive of Hamas, or at least bitterly anti-Israeli. And this is one of the problems that Israel is doing. Israel thinks now that it can defeat, or let me say that again, Netanyahu thinks that essentially Hamas can be defeated. Now, as a sort of paramilitary force, as it was 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago, yes, it can be defeated in terms of being far less significant in terms of a military force. But it is transitioning, has already transitioned to an insurgency, which is a very different matter. And one suspects, and I know a number of analysts hold this view, and I think I hold it myself, is that in fact, Netanyahu would be quite happy to have this reconfigured as an insurgency, which means more or less everlasting war or everlasting states of conflict, because that will keep him in power. One of the things, obviously, that Netanyahu fears is that if he falls from power for any reason, including the possibility of success, paradoxically, then he'll be facing all the civil problems that are there lined up on the criminal charges.
But the idea of the US bypassing Israel to talk to Hamas and facilitating the release of the Israeli-American Idan Alexander, and also talking to the Houthis about not targeting American shipping going through the Gulf. The Red Sea. So this was a deal done without Israel's say-so.
It was, and that will cause Netanyahu problems. And another factor here is that the United States is making reasonable contact with Syria. And essentially that was a big surprise that he met the new Syrian leader. And beyond that, there are indications, I wouldn't say more than that, that the informal talks that have been going on between United States and Iran on the nuclear issue have actually been making some progress. Now, from Netanyahu's point of view, that is rather bad news, because he would much prefer relations with Israel, within Iran, to be very bad, and to have the possibility of military action supported by the United States over Iran's nuclear facilities. So in that sense, the things that open up more. But one thing you were saying just earlier on, that essentially what now appears to be saying from the United States is that Hamas is making this offer to release all the remaining hostages, provided the whole siege is withdrawn. But what it is also saying is that a condition has to be Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. That is not going to happen, as far as one can tell. But at the same time, even to suggest that puts certain pressure on Netanyahu, because clearly the problem here is this seems to be a direct thing between elements in Hamas and the United States. And always remember that Qatar plays a very important role in this, and Trump and his people have spent some time there over the last few days.
Now, the question of Trump resurrecting the idea of Gaza as a new Riviera, he did it again. Now, we thought he'd forgotten about that particular proposal, but he raised it again, I think it was yesterday. And the idea that other countries around the region, and this might have been part of his negotiations with the various Gulf countries, that they would all agree to take in Palestinians who would be ejected from Gaza to make way for the Riviera. I mean, that's a non-starter.
I would have thought it's an absolute non-starter. For a start, I mean, obviously, Hamas itself, insofar as it has power and influence, won't accept that. I think there'd be very few countries across the Middle East where the leaderships would want to take in a lot of people from Gaza, including, of course, many who are bitterly anti-Israeli, and quite a few pretty bitter against the leaderships of the Gulf states, because of what they see as lack of support for the Palestinians over, well, over generations. So I think you've got a major problem here. The idea that people will just be, well, the oil-rich states will be sort of browbeaten by the United States into taking Palestinians. Well, the oil-rich states have an awful lot of power of their own line, and I don't think that is a starter, frankly. But here again, you have something coming out from Trump, something like a sort of a free area, a liberty area. We don't know what he means by that. It's sort of just words coming out. But as you say, it does look like he's going back to the idea of clearing Gaza out of 2.3 million people, and they can go, well, they can go almost anywhere. And that, of course, fits in with what Netanyahu is doing at present, making life intolerable for the Gazans as they're crammed into a smaller and smaller area. And you end up with Israelis actually bombing tented camps, which seems to me to be, if that is not a war crime, it's difficult to see what is.
Now, the United States has concluded deals. I mean, they may be just heads of agreement, but in terms of selling massive amounts of weaponry to Middle Eastern countries, and particularly Saudi Arabia, how might these weapons be used?
Well, that again is the question. Obviously, Saudi Arabia and the Emirates have been two of the really big importers of weapons from the United States and indeed from Britain, and they've been used regularly in bombings which have killed many civilians in this bitter war in Yemen. So already they're being used for that purpose. Essentially, the Western Gulf states want to be well-armed, partly because of problems like Yemen, but also because of the issue of Iran. And they see Iran as their potential threat, and this is why they're buying the arms. But one has to remember that in all this business, the international arms trade is probably the most corrupt of all the international trading systems. Therefore, there's an awful lot of money to be made. You know, if you're setting aside in a big deal, say 10% of what you're going to get for bribery, then you can do an awful lot of bribery with that. And that, I'm afraid, is one of the situations we face. So a lot of this is down to pure greed and economics, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and it was discussing, you know, why these billionaires surrounding Trump need, you know, tax cuts. And the reply was, just because you're a billionaire and you have clearly more money than you can ever spend in your life doesn't mean you're not greedy for more.
Yes, and I think one of the things one has to remember is it is all about peer groups. If your peer group has a minimum wealth of, say, $10 billion, then obviously you're concerned with getting into sort of the 20 billion lot and the rest. It is a matter of greed. And I remember some interesting work was done, I think, by some sociologists in Britain, actually managing to talk to relatively wealthy people. And essentially, the idea that they were a lot more wealthy than others was not a prime concern. The thing of prime concern was other people of their sort of levels of wealth, and you had to get on better than them. There's always the peer group pressure. And that, I'm afraid, is part of of any human factor. And it's true, I think, of virtually any country.
And, I mean, Trump's personal greed is there on show all the time, and he doesn't see anything wrong with it, and therefore he's quite blatant about what he's doing to enrich his family. And you wonder, with all the billions spent on arms deals to American companies, how much will flow back to the Trump family through the purchase of crypto and all the rest of it? I mean, it's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it is quite extraordinary. I mean, we are in an era of greater kleptocracy, applying to states that weren't considered to be notably kleptocratic before. And that, I think, is one of the biggest changes. As far as one can see with Trump, I mean, I think it's said quite rightly, there are only two words that really summarize him, and one is self and the other is wealth. And essentially, you put the two together, and this is where his source of power and his source of perceived success lies. And this is so very different, one hopes, from at least some politicians who are much more sort of concerned with the world as it really is and needs to be.
Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.